By buying into the false belief that our brains accurately perceive reality, we struggle to see beyond illusion. The grave mistake we've made is believing that what we can see is what's real, and that what we can't see is an illusion. When, based on quantum mechanics, it's looking more and more likely that the exact opposite of this is true. And by paying so much attention to the illusion, most of us fail to ever grasp true reality. Hello, and welcome to the Soul Horizon podcast. We're going to cut straight to the chase at the outset here. Then we'll work our way around and back to understand this topic more holistically. Let's get right into it now. The paradigm-exploding discoveries of quantum mechanics are the sort of everyday elephant in the room when it comes to our understanding of the nature of reality. Most notably, the discovery that everything we perceive to be physical, so physical matter, ourselves included, isn't actually physical, meaning that nothing in our reality is solid, tangible, or fixed. I'll be sharing a lot of quotes in this episode too, I meant to note that earlier, but here's one from Deepak Chopra's book Metahuman that really hits at the heart of this. It is, quote, "Matter only appears solid when you touch your forearm with your other hand. Go ahead and do this if you like. It seems as if two solid objects are coming into contact. In reality, you are experiencing two electromagnetic fields coming into contact with each other, which gives the impression of solidity. For example, two magnets with opposite poles facing each other create a repellent force. If magnets are powerful enough, a point will come when you cannot push them together until they touch. The repelling force will keep them apart. Therefore, from the magnet's perspective, the air between them feels solid." End quote. Chopra goes on to declare this just a few pages later. Quote, "On the surface of life, solid objects are just slow-moving ripples compared with, say, photons traveling at the speed of light. It's easy to have your head start to spin when you realize that your body, at best, is a constant stream of ever-shifting information." End quote. On that note, let's start with a series of questions to really pique our curiosity as we move deeper into this conversation. Questions like, are the things out there, so the objects that make up the seemingly physical world, a product of random chance or intelligent choice? And if they're a product of intelligent choice, meaning that they are conscious in some way, shape, or form, or hold consciousness just like we do, how does our consciousness in here affect consciousness out there or what we see out there? Is life entirely random and happening to us, or are we creating the experience or perhaps co-creating it along with source consciousness itself? If the latter, perhaps life then is a synchronistic series of interconnected and unified experiences intricately woven together to create a tapestry of form. If this is the case, is it possible that there are no accidents, no mistakes, and no randomness to our experiences at all? This would imply that everything, ourselves included, is a meaningful expression of divinity itself. And here are several more questions to drum up curiosity. What is reality? Is reality out there in the physical world? Is reality in here, in our bodies? Meaning, is reality what we subjectively interpret through our perceptions? Is it some combination of these things? Or is reality something else altogether? Something that exists beyond the grasp of our five physical senses? Does reality exist without someone to observe it? Or do we create reality through our observation of it? Does our consciousness create our reality? In other words, is what we observe out there a direct result of the perception that we have in here? If so, does this imply that all exists within a unified field of intelligence or consciousness? And what if the physical reality we experience as humans is actually a holographic virtual reality or a simulation that's projected forth from and perceived of by our brain? Is it possible then that our brain is constructing what we perceive to be physical reality in each and every moment? And if so, is this reality malleable? Is seeing believing, or is believing actually seeing? There's a quote from the book You Are the Universe, which was written by Deepak Chopra and Manas Kefatos. And it is, quote, "You are the creator of your reality, and yet you have no idea how you do it. The process is effortless," end quote. The doctor and the astrophysicist then go on to question, quote, "Is there anything that is real out there independent of us? Our answer is no," end quote. My intention with this episode is to open our minds to the multidimensional nature of reality, to break through the rather outmoded barriers of what is called naive realism. So the ones that suggest that our five human senses provide us with direct awareness of objects as they really are. It's naive realism that's left us bought into the illusion that reality is limited to only that which we can perceive through the usual five physical senses. Broadly speaking, though, my hope is to inspire you to shift your perception beyond the status quo belief that we live in a purely physical reality. Why? Because over 100 years ago, science turned this idea on its head and dismantled it. Yet somehow, we still haven't caught up in terms of the way we live every day. And I'd say it's about time that we get ourselves caught up. Because until we do, we'll mistake illusion for reality. Perhaps even more importantly, though, when our view of reality is fragmented, so when we're seeing this reality is made up of separate physical objects, our view of self and others is fragmented as well. We see ourselves then as being separate from all else, as opposed to one whole part of an even greater whole. And it's separation consciousness that is truly the root of all suffering. I believe that peering beyond the illusion of physicality and the illusion of separation that it naturally invokes is the first step towards unity consciousness on this planet. And so we will start right there with beginning to see beyond the illusion of the physical. To do so, let's start with the physics. And I will do my very best to keep this as interesting and succinct as possible for you. So first up is Newtonian dynamics, or classical physics, versus Einstein's theory of relativity. And so what I'm going to do here is compare first Newtonian physics to relativity, and then we will look at relativity and quantum mechanics. So flow with me, if you will, as we move through this together. In the book You Are the Universe, Deepak Chopra and Manas Kefatos very boldly speak to the fact that the paradigm-shifting waves that Einstein's theory of relativity had on clarifying the nature of reality still haven't been embraced by us ordinary, non-physics-focused humans. Chopra and Kefatos state, quote, "In some way, relativity had toppled both time and space. The average person could grasp that much. E equals mc squared was the most famous equation in history, but what it meant didn't touch everyday life either. People went about their daily existence as if none of Einstein's deep thinking mattered, not in practical terms. But that assumption has turned out to be wrong," end quote. They go on to say, quote, "The year 2015 marked the 100th anniversary of Einstein's final version of relativity, known as the general theory of relativity. And yet, the most radical implications of it haven't sunk in, not as it concerns what is real and what is illusion," end quote. In other words, despite having over 100 years to modify our worldview, For all intents and purposes, we're still perceiving reality through a flawed Newtonian lens, meaning that we're still looking at reality as being mechanistic. So in a mechanistic universe, we see ourselves as separate pieces within a sort of universal machine that has lots of separate pieces. Together, all of these separate pieces construct physical reality as we know it. Why we're so behind the physics times is a question for another day. What I'd rather spend time exploring here is how these two models differ from one another. So without getting too lost to the scientific fray, let's briefly explore the difference between Newtonian physics and relativity. In Newtonian physics, everything looks the same from every location in the universe, no matter how fast that observing location is moving or where it is in proximity to what's being observed. This is the idea of the clockwork universe, and you've probably heard that term used before. Clockwork universe is the notion that the universe we inhabit is mechanistic and inanimate, essentially. This idea also dismissed and explained away the intangible and subjective experience of human perception. So this was largely disregarded from a Newtonian framework or a Newtonian universal view on reality. In Newtonian physics, time is constant, as is space, meaning that neither variable can be changed, so they're always the same no matter where they're being measured in the universe. Of course, we know this isn't true thanks to relativity. So in relativity, speed and location matter, which means that time and space are relative. Relativity proved that there's no universal time because time itself is affected by both an observer's frame of reference and by being near a strong gravitational field. If you've seen the movie Interstellar, you likely know that the way that time was depicted in that movie is accurate. And the way that time was depicted in that movie is mind-boggling to those of us who had no idea what relativity really implied in terms of time differentials and the way that we experience time. We will explore the relative and illusion-based nature of time in a future episode in just a few weeks. So stay tuned for that. And I don't want to get too far into it here because that's an entirely different rabbit hole, or maybe I should call it a wormhole, given the nature of this conversation. So let's get back to this idea of relativity and Newtonian physics. So the point really here is that Einstein's theory of relativity really showed that Newtonian dynamics and that way of perceiving of the physics of the universe was not accurate. So we might think, okay, it's settled. You know, Einstein's theory of relativity must be the end-all, be-all in terms of explaining the nature of the universe, right? Our minds would love to tie up this conversation in a neat and tidy package and leave it there, but relativity is only one half of the whole picture of how science currently explains the nature of reality. If you've studied physics seriously or even for fun on the side, you'll likely know that the most puzzling predicament in the field of physics is that there still isn't what's called an integrated theory of everything. Instead, reality as we know it is accurately explained by two distinct theories. These are the theories of relativity and quantum mechanics. You might be sitting here thinking, okay, so what if there are two theories to explain reality? What's the problem with that? The problem is that these two theories don't mesh with one another, and yet we need both of them to explain reality as a whole. For over 100 years, everyone's been in agreement about two things. Relativity and quantum mechanics are both right, and yet they're entirely wrong for each other. An unsolvable mismatch made in physics heaven. Even Stephen Hawking gave up on finding a unified theory of everything and chose instead to settle for a sort of patchwork of separate theories that together created a quilted explanation of reality, even though these individual patchwork theories were at odds with one another. Thus, as it currently stands, the nature of reality isn't explained by a unified blanket theory that seamlessly encompasses everything. Instead, it's described by two separate theories that have been somewhat forcibly stitched together to pretend that they're a whole. And yet, the seam in this universal physics quilt is painstakingly visible to anyone who seeks coherence and cohesion. Relativity and quantum mechanics are like an at-odds, odd couple that's been forced to coexist for the sake of keeping everyone else's peace. And yet the ruse has always been up. This rift has never been hidden, even though everyone does their best to pretend it's not there. It's the seemingly unbridgeable chasm between relativity and quantum mechanics that served as the elephant in every physics room for a century now. Let's take a closer look at these two theories and the divide between them now. There's a quote by Deepak Chopra and Manas Kafatos that reads, quote, "Physics is about physicality, but physicality vanished in the quantum revolution," end quote. Relativity, again, this is the theoretical brainchild of Albert Einstein, although many physicists have contributed to the theory over the last century. But relativity accurately and elegantly explains the big things in reality with a single equation, and that is E equals mc squared. Relativity accurately accounts for the gravity of billiard balls, orbiting planets, colliding galaxies, and the expanding nature of the universe. Simply put, relativity describes the tangible particle aspects of the universe. All the big things as we know them behave as relativity predicts they would. Everything that is, except for the singularity of a black hole. That's a mystery left unsolved by relativity, but we'll save that rabbit hole for another day. Quantum mechanics, on the other hand, accurately accounts for the tiny things in reality, the subatomic world of quanta. Think photons, electrons, and all the teeny tiny fundamental particles that structure what we perceive to be the larger physical structures of this universe, us included. Quantum mechanics accurately describes the intangible aspects of the universe that inform the tangible matter aspects, at least from the vantage point of our human eyes. But there's more that separates these two theories than just the big things versus the little things. So relativity describes reality as being smooth and continuous, a universe in which cause and effect can be determined. It provides a predictable or deterministic explanation of physical reality. Quantum mechanics, on the other hand, offers us a sort of Wild West explanation of reality in which only the most probable of an infinite range of possibilities can be determined. It provides a probabilistic explanation of reality. In other words, reality according to relativity has outcomes that are definite. Reality according to quantum mechanics has outcomes that are probable. In relativity, cause and effect scenarios are limited by the speed of light, meaning that the fastest that one particle could affect another particle would be the speed of light. Reality, according to relativity, is bound by the limits of space and time, or the time-space continuum, or fourth dimension. Quantum mechanics, on the other hand, allows for instantaneous and non-local effects that pay no mind to space or time. And this is why Einstein famously described the phenomenon of quantum entanglement as spooky action at a distance, because it was at first assumed that somehow two entangled particles were communicating with each other across space at a speed that would have had to have been faster than the speed of light because of the distance traveled. However, what we now understand from the quantum perspective is that two entangled particles engage in non-local communication, meaning that there is no crossing of space over the course of time. Thus, the speed of light is essentially made irrelevant in quantum mechanics, so it's not broken, if that makes sense. We'll get into this more in the time episode, but just to briefly explain it here. The bottom line here, though, is that the rules of quantum mechanics are rather unruly. Thus, they generously allow for seemingly unfathomable experiences like quantum leaps, teleportation, and I believe, along with many others, things like clairvoyance, precognition, telepathy, and the like. In the words of Deepak Chopra and Manus Kafatos, quote, quantum behavior forces us to be tolerant of impossible things, end quote. So the question becomes, when we're looking at these two theories, is reality as a whole truly described by two separate theories that refuse to mesh with one another? Is there an entirely different, yet-to-be-discovered theory that would better describe reality as a whole? So a theory like string theory or M theory? Or is it possible that we've simply overlooked the unifying thread between relativity and quantum mechanics? Let's explore the idea of a possible connecting thread now. More recently, it's been hypothesized that these two accurate yet at odds theories, so relativity and quantum theory or quantum mechanics, could be woven together into a unified fabric by none other than us, or more specifically, by our minds or our perception, or rather our consciousness. Deepak Chopra and Manus Kafatos hit on this point in their book, You Are the Universe, noting, quote, as it happens, this rift leads to a remarkable possibility. Our minds, including the stream of everyday thoughts that run through our heads, might be influencing reality out there. This could be why small things don't behave the way big things do, end quote. Later in the book, they remark, quote, if it takes an observer seated squarely in the classical world to prompt a photon to make a choice, seated squarely in the quantum world, how alien could these two realms be? End quote. But what does this mean exactly? Let's explore this now. Again, I'm going to lean on Chopra and Kafatos here with a quote because they explain it so succinctly. Quote, think of pop-up books. Creation is like that when viewed at the quantum level. There's flatness, and suddenly there are objects in space-time. Everything pops up at once. Therefore, the isolated behavior of particles isn't really indicative of reality. In order for a tree, a cloud, a planet, or the human body to exist, there isn't really a piling up of subatomic particles, atoms, and molecules the way bricks are assembled to build a house. Instead, the subatomic particles bring space and time with them. End quote. To our eyes, the physical world we see around us appears fixed and static, just as our bodies do. Yet in truth, it's not fixed at all. Rather, quantum science proves that everything physical, us included, is winking in and out of existence as if being turned on and off by a switch. Moving from formless potential, wave, to manifested form, particle, so quickly, instantaneously rather, that it appears to be permanently fixed in front of our eyes, and yet it isn't. So through the limitations of our human senses, our brains perceive the physical world as fixed and static, but it actually isn't this way. It's in constant flux and continuous flow. And yet, very much like a movie projector, our mind strings together the snapshots created when the quantum winks on to generate a mental movie that suggests that we're existing in a static physical reality. In other words, the mind is only able to see the quantum on phase, completely missing or perhaps dismissing the quantum off phase. But what does this really mean? To really understand what this means in terms of our everyday reality, we need to peer into the quantum realm to look at how subatomic particles behave. So we really need to zoom in here. All subatomic particles have both a wave-like aspect and a particle-like aspect to them, meaning that they can behave as a wave and as a particle. However, they can't behave like both at the same time. So they can be a wave or a particle, but not both at once. In a wave state, a subatomic particle exists out of the bounds of time and space, meaning that it's essentially nowhere and no thing, and yet everywhere and all things at once. In a particle state, a subatomic particle collapses its wave potential to exist as seemingly fixed matter, so physical matter, within the bounds of space and time. which means that it's measurable in a distinct location, so a distinct location in space, at a distinct moment in linear time. Crazy, right? But the real mind boggle happens when we learn how a subatomic particle decides whether it's going to exist in a state of wave potential or whether it's going to manifest, so collapse itself, from a wave into its particle form in any given moment in time. So how exactly do subatomic particles decide whether they'll behave as a wave or a particle in any given moment? According to the observer effect, the very act of observing a subatomic particle in its non-physical wave state, so its off switch, is what informs how it manifests in its particle state, its on switch. And we, as humans, are the observers doing the observing. Interestingly, subatomic particles behave the same way when an instrument is observing them as well. They essentially know when something is recording them or paying attention to them. So how can this be so? Through the act of observation, an observed subatomic particle collapses its wave function, so its potential, to become physical matter, so manifested in a specific location in linear time and space. However, without being observed, quantum particles like photons and electrons act like waves and display no discrete location in time or space, or rather in the fabric of space-time, meaning that they're held within a sort of unmanifested state of potential until they're observed by us. Essentially, what this means is that the building blocks of physical reality, elementary subatomic particles, exist purely as potential, so without form, without space, and without location, in linear time, until we observe them. It's the act of our observation that inspires waves to collapse into physical particles in time and space, meaning that we're literally influencing and at high levels creating reality by observing it. It's the mental act of observing, so perception, that solidifies reality into physical form at the quantum level. Particles are always in their wave state of potential, meaning that they're nowhere and no thing, and yet everywhere and all things at once, until they're observed. It's when a particle is observed that its wave function collapses to become manifested particle matter at a precise location in linear space-time. In the words of Dr. Joe Dispenza in the book Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, quote, "In other words, a particle cannot manifest in reality, that is, ordinary space-time as we know it, until we observe it," end quote. And I'll point it out again here because for those who are very focused on the materialist view of reality, the perspective is always, well, you know, recording it with a recording device is also something that collapses the wave function. And yet we are still the ones implementing the device as humans to observe it. And so this interconnected nature of consciousness shows up and is still required to collapse the wave function, because if there's no one there to observe it, or if there's no one intending to observe it, whether that's through a device or through our own eyes, it doesn't matter, because it's the intention of observation that collapses the wave function and creates particle matter. It's challenging to mentally grasp how paradigm shifting this fact is in terms of the way we perceive reality. But when we intuitively feel into it, it feels big. And it feels big because it is big. Deepak Chopra speaks to this in the book Metahuman, noting, quote, "If our eyes are physically interacting with quanta, this helps us to understand that observation was never passive. We have been participating at the place where virtual reality gets an opportunity to create physical reality." Dr. Joe Dispenza also speaks to this in his book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, stating, quote, "If subatomic particles can exist in an infinite number of possible places simultaneously, we are potentially capable of collapsing into existence an infinite number of possible realities. In other words, if you can imagine a future in your life based on any one of your personal desires, that reality already exists as a possibility in the quantum field. waiting to be observed by you. If your mind can influence the appearance of an electron, then theoretically it can influence the appearance of any possibility, end quote. When we believe that the physical world is fixed and static, we're dimmed to the power of our own influence over its malleability. But according to quantum science, we aren't passive observers of our world. Rather, we're creating the world we perceive through the act of observing it. What appears to be physical matter is, in truth, manifested energetic potential. Everything physical, including us, is perpetually winking into particle existence from its non-physical state of potential. And according to the law of quantum physics, the observer of the wave state of a subatomic particle is able to influence the way it collapses into particle reality, so into physical matter. And the crazy thing is that even physical matter isn't at all physical matter, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. But before we do, I want to talk about how this applies in our everyday lives. There are many distortions that have been used to obscure the way we perceive reality, to keep us dim to our own power, to influence reality as well. I believe that one of the most detrimental of all of these distortions is the one that's led us to believe that reality is limited to what we can physically perceive through our five human senses. In other words, by buying into the false belief that our brains accurately perceive reality, we struggle to see beyond illusion. The grave mistake we've made is believing that what we can see is what's real, and that what we can't see is an illusion. When, based on quantum mechanics, it's looking more and more likely that the exact opposite of this is true. Deepak Chopra and Manas Kafatos speak to this in You Are the Universe when they say, quote, "A major drawback of naive realism is the assumption that the human brain delivers a picture of reality, when in fact it doesn't. It delivers a convincing three-dimensional image of the world that is nothing more than a perception," end quote. All it takes is a brief glimpse into the rather unbelievable world of quantum mechanics to begin to recognize that what we perceive through the brain, so through our human senses, is a cleverly constructed virtual reality, a complex illusion of physicality that's informed almost entirely by energy. And again, we'll get to that in just a moment where we discuss just how much of reality or physical reality is actually energy, because it's nearly 100% of it. But to get back to this first, so physicality is really a complex illusion created by the human brain, which is essentially a brilliant supercomputer that's able to quantify incoming information in a way that constructs this virtual reality that we move through each and every day. And this is not to downplay the human body whatsoever, but rather to evoke a sort of innate memory that our consciousness is essentially in this physical body and using it as a vehicle while we're here on Earth. And our consciousness is not limited to the confines of this body, but rather is infinite and eternal beyond the confines of the human body. The thing, though, is that we've been programmed to buy into the illusion of physicality to the point of believing it's the ultimate reality. It's ironic, isn't it? How dangerous, though, is it to perceive of this physical illusion as reality and to then perceive of energetic reality as illusion? Why is it dangerous? And of course, this is my perspective, so take it with a grain of salt. But I believe it's dangerous because a greater and far more dynamic energetic reality exists beyond the surface of this illusion. And by paying so much attention to the illusion, most of us fail to ever grasp true reality. In the words of Dr. Joe Dispenza, quote, "Until you break from the way you see your present reality, any change in your life will always be haphazard and transitory. To do that, you'll need to be open to a new interpretation of what is real and true," end quote. When we falsely believe that what we can physically see and sense is what's most true, we're not only disconnected from the true nature of reality, we're disconnected from the true nature of ourselves as well. And when we buy into the illusion that we're only skin and bones, we make meaningless things matter far too much. we buy into this limited and fractional earth reality to the detriment of all other realities beyond it. We stop seeing ourselves as empowered and divinely informed co-creators of our reality and see ourselves instead as victims of our human circumstances. This reversal, so the one that leads to the overvaluation of the material world, keeps us dim to and disconnected from the magnitude of our own co-creative power and inherent divinity. Instead of expanding into our limitless potential, we become trapped in an unfulfilling loop that feeds and sustains the material illusion. And we struggle to believe in the possibility of anything that can't be experienced through the limitations of our five physical senses, or scientifically measured. But our consciousness itself is what brings life to this reality, and consciousness has yet to be measured or quantified by science. Yet does this make it any less real? I don't see how it could, right? Because we're sitting here and we're conscious of this right now. I'm conscious of speaking to you, and you're conscious of me delivering this information. So keeping all of this in mind, when we begin to reconnect with the energetic reality that exists behind and informs the physical illusion without, we begin to awaken and reveal the dormant creative power that exists within, or rather the dormant co-creative power that exists within, the divine and infinite intelligence that allows us to sense beyond the illusion of physicality. As Deepak Chopra directly calls out in the book Metahuman, quote, "Having spent a lifetime adapting to the artificial reality you inherited as a child, you have to undertake a journey to discover the difference between reality and illusion," end quote. Recognizing the fact that we live in an energetic reality far more than we live in a physical one is a major and catalytic shift in terms of our perception, because it allows us to recognize the holistic and interconnected nature of reality. It allows us to see ourselves as one whole part of yet an even larger whole, as opposed to one incomplete part in a sea of other separate parts that sort of make up a whole. From this vantage point, so the interconnected and unified vantage point, we're able to perceive ourselves as human beings, not by our distinctions, separations, and boundaries, but rather by our unifying similarities, because we're all whole parts who contribute to an even greater whole. Here's something I like to keep in mind. We play by the rules we pay attention to. When we put all of our attention on this three-dimensional reality, so space, time, circumstance, we're forced to play by the rules of three-dimensional reality. This idea is summarized from something that Joe Dispenza shared in the series Rewired on Gaia TV. If you have a chance to watch it, I highly recommend it. It's very, very powerful and empowering. I've often referred to this as the feeling of being too zoomed in on life to have an accurate perspective of the greater multidimensional reality. According to Dr. Joe Dispenza, when we focus on the physical, we become more particle and less wave. In other words, our reality becomes more fixed and static and less fluid and malleable, meaning that we construct our future reality out of finite limitations as opposed to infinite potentials. I find that it helps to think about this with an example. So let's say you had the resources to build any house you could dream of. Would you build it with the same floor plans and materials that were used for your current home? Or would you expand the horizons to create something entirely new? If you can't dream beyond your current home, then I suppose you'd build the same thing all over again. However, if you allowed yourself to dream beyond your current home, I'd venture to guess that you'd build something entirely different. And the point I'm hoping to make here is that when we're too zoomed in on three-dimensional reality as it currently exists, we struggle to see past its boundaries and limitations. We struggle to imagine anything beyond what we have when all we're focused upon is what we already have or what we don't have. Energy flows where attention goes, and if it's our energetic perception that influences our physical reality, then paying attention to only what's in front of our five human senses will get us more of what's already in front of our five human senses. Thus, we end up creating more of the same in the future because we're not imagining beyond our three-dimensional circumstances. This is a sort of copy-paste way of manifesting, and so many of us do this. And it's not our fault either. This is really part of that distortion or reversal that I was speaking to earlier. But instead of creating anew by tapping into infinite possibilities, we generate entire lives that become exact replicas or slightly modified ones of what's familiar to our five human senses. When we can't see beyond what we've always known or what's familiar to us, what happens is that we project replicas of the past into the future from the power of the present moment. Something very important to keep in mind here is that imagination isn't frivolous, it's creative. Did you know that Einstein's famous equation, E equals mc squared, was the product of his imagination, or actually his intuition? His pinnacle theory of relativity came to be because he trusted in the intuitive impulses of his imagination. The theory lived in his imagination long before Einstein put it to the test with mathematics. We should all be grateful that Einstein trusted his intuition. Imagination is the first step in manifesting a future physical reality that's beyond our present physical reality. But to do this, we must stop basing our energetic dreams on what's already physically, quote unquote, real. We must allow ourselves to imagine beyond it. We must zoom out of three-dimensional reality and tune into the multidimensional awareness within ourselves. When we do this, we're able to imagine beyond what's in our present moment reality. But how exactly do we zoom out? According to Chopra and Kafatos, quote, "Going into the quantum state doesn't mean that every solid object becomes illusory and all your friends are imaginary. It means that you've stepped into another perspective. And by perceiving your life as a multidimensional series of quantum events, that's what it becomes." End quote. The key here is that to zoom out, we must detach. The less attached we are, the more easily we're able to imagine beyond our present moment physical reality. There's another quote from Chopra and Kafatos that speaks to this predicament. It is, quote, "The things a person can't perceive may simply lie outside the range of what human sense organs can perceive, like our inability to see ultraviolet light or to hear ultrasound. Still, a great deal of distorted reality depends on expectations, memories, biases, fears, and willfulness. Don't bother me with the facts, my mind is already closed, is too true a statement to be funny. Instead of filters, we are dealing with self-created sensors, mental watchdogs that shut out certain information because it is personally unacceptable." End quote. In other words, it's our attachment to the physical world and all of the stories our egos have built within and around it that keeps us shackled to repeating loops and limited future outcomes. It's when we stop identifying with the attachments of our limited self, so our ego or small self, that we begin to expand into the fluidity and flexibility of our limitless self, so our true self or higher self. Deepak Chopra brings another beautiful quote in his book, Metahuman. It is, quote, "Self is a convenient fiction, lumping together a jumble of beliefs, experiences, old conditioning, and secondhand opinions," end quote. Seeing beyond the physical allows us to see beyond the illusions of limitation that constrict us to finite experiences. So attachments are self-imposed, or rather ego-imposed, limitations. The more we limit ourselves through our attachments, the more we limit the reality we perceive of out there as well. It can be no other way. Everything bends, binds, and breaks at the will of our perception. So when our perception of self becomes unattached and flexible, so too does our perception of the reality that we exist within or that exists out there. It's our attachments or our ego's attachments that induce our suffering. Because the more rigidly attached we are to anything, the more we'll suffer to maintain it, even when it no longer suits us. So not to mention the fact that it no longer suits the expansion of our soul. The ego will work to maintain its attachments, whether it's to beliefs or ideologies or material possessions or people, whatever it is, even when those things are destructive to us. It doesn't take us looking much further than substance addiction to know that this is true. But moving back to this part of the conversation, in other words, recognizing that reality is energetic allows us to step into our own limitlessness and to free ourselves from fixed ways of existing. Everything that's currently unexplainable becomes inherently explainable when we open our minds fully to the fact that the stuff of physical reality is predominantly energetic. The atoms that make up all of the quote-unquote physical objects that we perceive, ourselves included, are 99.99999% empty space. That empty space, of course, isn't actually empty. It's filled with energy. Thus, the physical you that you perceive of, you're only actually 0.00001% physical matter. The rest of you is energy. The same is true of the world around you, including the chair or floor that supports you right now. The more that we see through the illusion of physicality and embrace the energetic nature of reality as truth, the more our consciousness naturally and progressively expands. Because being aware of the energetic nature of reality puts us in touch with our intuitive senses, so our quantum senses. Our energetic sensing organs that exist outside the bounds of time and space, and in addition to the five physical senses. And we can think of these intuitive senses as sort of broadly defined as higher sensory perception. That's a topic that we'll explore in a future episode in this season, so we won't go into it too far now. So let's bring it back to the heart of this conversation. The reason I find science to be so valuable to questions about consciousness and spirituality is because it can be leveraged to break down the mind's or the ego's barriers to greater spiritual truths. If we're coming from a very logical mindset, then our first step on the journey beyond illusion begins with a spoonful of the mind's own medicine, logic. And if done thoughtfully, we can use logic to quiet the mind and soften its rigidity. So we really meet the mind where it's at. We can soften the mind's rigid boundaries by presenting it with information that speaks its own language. That way, it's not perceived as a threat. Because here's the thing. When the mind isn't on board, it yells, it kicks, it screams so loudly that we can't hear those intuitive whispers of our soul. Until the logical mind or the ego too begins to recognize, or at least soften to, a new dimension of truth, it will do everything in its power to resist the natural evolution of our consciousness. And it will convince us to buy back into the comfortable illusion. And it will do this time and time again. Deepak Chopra speaks to this, stating, quote, "In the case of the human mind, the failsafe protects virtual reality from being dismantled. Strangely, the mind must be protected from its own infinite potential." End quote. So if paradigm-shifting logic and scientific facts are what the mind needs to begin to soften its walls, well then, that's what we start with. We start with paradigm-shifting logic and scientific facts. The goal is to soften the mind's resistance enough to evoke a sense of curiosity. Curiosity is an open and receptive state, one in which we open up to possibilities that we'd previously dismissed or hadn't considered. And this is where beautiful and expansive shifts in our perception begin to unfold. Because to flow with the ever-evolving truth, we must allow our minds to believe in seemingly impossible things. Because as it just so happens, the truth is stranger than fiction. Or rather, reality is stranger than illusion. So in addition to everything we've already covered, here are some paradigm-disrupting facts and insights from prominent and highly regarded thought leaders that both cater to the logical mind and begin to dissolve its rigid walls. We'll start with Albert Einstein himself. Quote, "Everything is energy, and that's all there is to it. Match the frequency of the reality you want, and you cannot help but get that reality." End quote. In the book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, Dr. Joe Dispenza discusses how breakthroughs in the field of physics have required our understanding of an atom to change over time. And many of us don't know this because the classical model of the atom, at least when I was in school, was still the one that was shown, even though it was long outdated. I'd be curious to know if it's still the one that is shown in physics classes across the United States and across the world. The classical model is the one most of us will recall when we think of an atom. If you're picturing an atom as having a central point with electrons orbiting around it, then you're envisioning the classical atom. The classical model of the atom focuses truly only on the material structure of the atom. And that's exactly why the classical model of the atom is so outdated, because we now know, well, in truth, we've known for a very long time, that the atom is 99.99999% energy and only 0.00001% physical matter. In truth, the atom, the seemingly physical building block of material reality, is almost entirely immaterial. Dr. Dispenza notes that the new school model of the atom is essentially an electron cloud surrounding a central nucleus. What's crazy, though, is that even that model is inaccurate. Dispenza notes that the most realistic model of an atom is quite literally nothing. Because in truth, an atom is no thing materially, and yet all things potentially. This is, of course, focusing on this idea of the quantum subatomic particle, because it exists as a wave, and waves, or the wave state of a subatomic particle, is not measurable because it's non-local and it is outside the bounds of space and time. It isn't until it collapses that it becomes what we perceive to be matter or physical matter. But again, even that collapsed physical matter is actually only 0.00001% physical. The rest of it is energy. If you're a visual learner like I am, check the show notes for a link to a document where I've included Dr. Dispenza's three different visuals of the atom. Now let's talk about the limitations of the physical senses, so the five well-known human senses. Chopra and Kafatos state in the book You Are the Universe, quote, "Einstein realized that time, space, matter, and energy were interchangeable. This single idea deposed the normal world of the five senses with its claim that nothing we see, hear, taste, touch, and smell is reliable," end quote. And yet, we still believe it. We believe in the illusions produced by our senses. And I say this as someone who falls for this every single day of my life as well. Often, we believe in the illusions produced by our senses to our own detriment, and most definitely to our soul's detriment, because we find ourselves more dedicated to maintaining the persistence of the mind's illusion than evolving beyond it to sense into the truth brought forth through the infinite awareness of our own consciousness. The mind's expectation that the illusion is real and persistent disrupts our ability to perceive beyond it. And here's another quote from Chopra and Kafatos. Quote, "If the mind can fool the senses and the senses can fool the mind, reality becomes suddenly less substantial," end quote. Our sensing organs aren't sensing in a factually definitive way. They couldn't possibly be doing so because, for example, we perceive color and light differently than other animals. Thus, our sensing organs, our ears, our eyes, our mouth, hands, and nose, perceive of quantum events in the external world, and our brain then translates this information into a human experience. an experience that seems objective to us as humans, and yet turns out to be entirely subjective as compared to other animals perceiving through other nervous systems. And on that note, so let's talk a little bit more about light's invisibility, because this is probably mind-boggling to you as it was to me when I discovered this as I was writing this episode. I didn't actually know this until I sat down to write out the specifics for this episode. So did you know that, to date, no one can explain how sunlight bouncing off an object makes it visible to us? The nature of sight is a complete mystery. The mystery deepens when we consider the fact that photons, units of light, are invisible. They aren't actually bright and glowing, even though our vision perceives sunlight as bright and glowing. And again, I'll leave it to Chopra and Kafatos with a quote here. If you're interested in all of this material, I would recommend grabbing a copy of this book because they explain some very complicated topics in a very succinct way. They cover what I have read in many, many books in one book. So I would start there rather than going to lots of different sources. But this quote is, quote, "If light is invisible to begin with, there can be no way to make it visible except through a nervous system. And once that is accomplished, light is no longer its natural self, but a neural creation. Change the nervous system and light will change with it. An owl's acute night vision, the ability of an eagle to spot a mouse from hundreds of feet in the air, the underwater sight of dolphins, and a bat's ability to quote-unquote see using echolocation, all of these examples are radically different from human sight. Therefore, the assumption that we see quote-unquote real light is unfounded. There is nothing about photons that necessarily makes them visible. Billions of stars and galaxies are totally invisible until a nervous system turns them luminous." End quote. Now let's talk about how our awareness of reality is fractional. There's a quote by Dr. Joe Dispenza that reads, quote, "The brain processes 400 billion bits of information a second, but we're only aware of 2,000 of those. That means that reality is happening in the brain all the time." End quote. And I'll expand upon that by clarifying that what he's saying there is that reality is happening in the brain all the time. We're just unaware of most of it. And I did the math on this. So stated in another way, of all the data the brain receives in a given second, we're aware of only 0.000005% of it. This means that we're unaware of 99.9999995% of the information the brain is processing each and every instant, or each and every second. Which really begs an important question. Is reality limited to only what we're consciously aware of? We treat it as such, we certainly do. Yet this fact right here turns that idea on its head and shakes it right on out. How can we possibly claim to understand reality when we're unaware of almost 100% of it? It is so mind-boggling to the ego that it wants to just shove it away. So how can we possibly claim to understand reality when we're unaware of almost 100% of it? And as a side note, isn't it fascinating to consider what might be held within that 99.999 and so on percent of information we're not consciously aware of? And is it possible that individuals with psychic gifts or quote-unquote gifts, because I believe truly that everyone is able to tap into these potentials, it's just a matter of training our minds to quiet enough to tune in to the resonance of our heart and of our soul. But is it possible that individuals with psychic gifts like clairvoyance, telepathy, precognition, and even telekinesis are simply able to bring more of that usually ignored information into their conscious awareness? This is just something to ponder for curiosity's sake right now, but I hope to get into more of that in a future episode as well. Now let's talk about what's known as reification. Did you know that we only perceive reality as being physical because of a process known as reification? Reification is, quote, giving immaterial experiences thingness, end quote. Chopra goes on to state, quote, no object is actually a physical thing, pure and simple. Object and thing and physical are strands of a mental web, end quote. In other words, the physicality of matter is a mental construct that's created and projected through the human supercomputer, otherwise known as the brain. This might seem like a stretch, but again, we know that 99.99999% of what we perceive to be physical as matter is actually energetic. But what does this actually mean, practically speaking? And how is it that a heavy brick, let's say, feels so physical to our senses? By understanding how reification impacts our perception of the world, we can begin to peer beyond the illusion of physicality as well. For example, perhaps a brick isn't actually quote-unquote heavy on its own. Rather, everything is relative, including heaviness. And maybe it's the way our brain interprets the brick that gives it its solidity and its heaviness. In this case, it's our awareness that's created and constructed the brick's physicality and its heaviness. There's no arguing that a brick is denser and heavier than a sheet of paper, let's say. And yet, maybe it isn't actually heavy in the grand scheme of matter, but only appears to be heavy because our minds assess heaviness on a scale of relativity. In a different universe, perhaps the physicality of Earth, so the world that we're inhabiting now, would appear to that universe to be akin to what we perceive here to be a fog. Because in that universe, people's bodies maybe are as dense as lead. We might appear to be barely perceptible apparitions in a universe that's that dense. And to finish, I want to talk about how consciousness influences matter. Dr. Joe Dispenza speaks to the mind's, or rather consciousness's, powerful ability to influence matter in this quote from Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. This is a really long one, but it's a very powerful quote, and I want to share it with you for that reason. Quote, like clay, the energy of infinite possibilities is shaped by consciousness, your mind. And if all matter is made of energy, it makes sense that consciousness, mind in this case, and energy, matter, according to the quantum model, are so intimately related that they are one. Mind and matter are completely entangled. Your consciousness, or mind, has effects on energy, or matter, because your consciousness is energy, and energy has consciousness. You are powerful enough to influence matter because at the most elementary level, you are energy with a consciousness. You are mindful matter. In the quantum model, the physical universe is an immaterial, interconnected, unified field of information. Potentially everything, but physically no thing. The quantum universe is just waiting for a conscious observer, you or me, to come along and influence energy in the form of potential matter by using the mind and consciousness, which are themselves energy, to make waves of energetic probabilities coalesce into physical matter. Just as the wave of possibility of the electron manifests as a particle within a specific momentary event, we as observers cause a particle or groups of particles to manifest physical experiences in the form of events in our lives, end quote. If you don't believe your mind is able to influence matter, consider this very ordinary everyday experience, or what could be an ordinary everyday experience, or at least one that we've likely all experienced at one time or another. So imagine for a moment that you're going about your day in a very ordinary way. You're feeling calm and peaceful and focused. Then, completely out of the blue, you receive a phone call with shocking news. News that you didn't expect at all. This could be positive news or negative news, but for this example, let's just say it's news that your mind interprets as being negative. The instant that your mind becomes aware of this shocking news, it literally begins to construct a new physical reality in your body, one that's entirely different than the moment just prior to hearing the news. So let's say this is news that your mind interprets as frightening. In this case, your mind's interpretation of the news activates the body's stress response. Now, if you hadn't interpreted it as stressful, let's say someone else would have interpreted it as stressful, but you don't, this wouldn't happen, right? It is all about our interpretation in the mind and according to the ego and the ego's attachments. From this vantage point, we can see how it all winds back to attachments because it is our attachments that depict and define the way our mind interprets circumstance. So again, let's say that this is news that your mind interprets as frightening. In this case, your mind's interpretation of the news, again, activates the body's stress response. So your neurons then begin firing in a certain way, which leads to neuropeptides, which are the communicators of the nervous system, being sent down to the body to tell it to produce and or to excrete the hormones that match the mind's frightened response. From there, you begin to physically feel the effects of stress and fear. And this all happens so quickly that it is completely unintentional in terms of your conscious mind's intent. So you might break into a cold sweat or feel nauseous or dizzy. Your mind might begin racing. Your palms could go cold and clammy. You get the idea. The point is that it's not the shocking news itself, so the circumstance, that elicits the physical changes in your body. It couldn't possibly be because someone else could interpret it in an entirely different way. It's your mental response pattern. It's your thoughts that induces these physical changes in your body. The mind produces thoughts, and thoughts are things that influence physical, or rather energetic, as we now know, reality. This is true whether we believe in it or not. The beauty in believing is that we recognize that we have a say in reality, in this reality that we've so long interpreted as being purely physical or mostly physical. We aren't passive experiencers of a mechanistic reality, but rather we're active co-creators in an intelligently unified reality existing within a participatory universe. I'd like to share one final quote with you before we wrap up this episode. This one is from Ascension Glossary, and it captures the essence of this information as a whole. It reads, quote, "In actuality, solid matter is an illusion of our physical senses, as what we are really perceiving are vortices of energy that are radiating a unique energy signature. Ultimately, we are multidimensional collective consciousness beings vibrating at a certain frequency that are co-creating what we experience in the physical, material world," end quote. On that note, let's leave it here for today. There's so much more I'd like to share on this topic, but my intention is to keep these episodes digestible and curiosity piquing. If you're hungry for more, I recommend exploring the resources listed in the show notes and allowing your intuition to guide your exploration. Next week's episode will be a companion episode to this one. It includes a variety of intuitive insights on this very topic that have trickled to the page from my intuition in the last many months. Whereas this episode was focused on breaking down the barriers of mind, my intention with next week's episode is that it will open your heart to possibility. As always, thank you for listening. I hope you found this episode to be supportive of your own consciousness journey in some way, shape, or form. Until we chat again, take care.